You know what's a lot more fun than thinking about how to best pay off student loans? Thinking about how rich you're going to be one day in spite of your student loans. That's why we started the Financially Free Era podcast. Financially Free Era, if you search that term on any podcast platform, you're going to find it. It's hosted by my colleague Megan McGuire over at SLP Wealth. And this podcast is where we dive deep into all the things you want to know about how to be wealthy one day. How do you best maximize tax loopholes and write-offs? How do you best invest money? How do you make smart money moves in spite of even a very large six-figure student loan balance that are going to get you where you want to be much sooner? Go follow the Financially Free Era podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I promise you, if you like Student Loan Planners podcast, you will love Financially Free Era by SLP Wealth. Search that term, follow the show, you will love it. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner podcast. We are waiting for the final regulations to come out from the Trump administration on the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. And while we're waiting on that, I thought it would be kind of fun to do a little bit of an unusual podcast and ask a provocative question, dive into it, and see how it might affect your New Year's resolutions. So my provocative question for today is, will retiring too late kill you? Now, that is a little bit of a loaded question. I will explain why I was thinking about it and why I think it might give you some encouragement for your life. So the reason I thought about this question at all is on social media, I saw this account, Jeff Rose, CFP, and he posted this association between retirement and mortality. You always have to be skeptical of sources around things like this, right? So we'll talk about that in a second. But what the graph said is it looked at this actuarial study that looked at age at retirement and then average age at death. So it plotted it out, and if your average age of retirement was about 55, according to this study, you lived until 83 on average. If your age of retirement was 60 years old, then your average age at death was about 78, so about 5 years shorter lifespan. And then if you retired at 65, your average age at death was only about 67, so literally about 2 years of life after retiring if you wait until 65. Is that true? Is that something that we should believe, and what does it mean for your financial planning in relation to your student loans? Does it mean anything else on how you would work right now? So let's talk about that a little bit, because I think it's pretty interesting. I dove into this and looked at more than just this one study, which I think is, of course, very important in the world of modern AI, social media, just making stuff up and maybe it not being true. And so I looked at NIH research that looked at basically a survey of many studies. So they looked at 25 studies. They found that early retirement was not associated with the higher risk of mortality. So in other words, if you retire early, the great news is it's not expected to shorten your lifespan, according to the research. And retiring, quote unquote, on time was associated with a higher risk of mortality, but they do call out that that might affect the healthy worker effect, meaning that if you're healthy, you've saved well, you have the ability to retire early, people might be disproportionately likely to retire earlier. If their health is good, they can enjoy that health. And if somebody desperately needs the health insurance until 65, they might be inclined to stick around because they have health conditions, they need coverage until they reach Medicare age. So, you know, in other words, the overall research, not just based on one study, is that retiring at 65 might not be the best for you, but that actually, if some of the studies adjusted for, you know, this healthy worker effect, and they found that once you adjusted for someone's pre-existing conditions, essentially there was no effect either way of retiring early or late. It doesn't matter in terms of your life expectancy. So that's actually good news. So the answer of, will retiring too late kill you? The answer is actually no, it won't kill you. It probably doesn't have an impact on your life expectancy, according to the research. So how did this study get out there into the meme-verse? Basically, there was this supposed study, a couple studies. So one was from Shell Oil, and they looked at the pension data for people who retired at ages 55, 60, and 65 between 1973 and 2003. And it found essentially that people who retired early did have higher mortality than people that retired at 65. But again, that's like, there's another study that finds something different. So basically, like, supposedly there was a study at Boeing that showed folks that retired early live longer, and people that retired at 65 don't last as long. The problem is then, you know, the Boeing's director of actuarial services like debunked it and said, actually, this data is not true. Somebody just sort of made this up. So crazy, right? If you look at the best data, which is looking at all the different studies with the NIH telling you what they've found with the research, retiring too late won't kill you specifically, and then retiring too soon won't kill you. You know, in other words, there's not that strong of an impact on your mortality. So great news. So why did I want to talk about this? What I think is a lot of times people think about a goal, right? And I'm specifically around retirement. When people in their 30s, especially their mid-30s, I find people start thinking about retirement like in the abstract, like, oh, I might retire one day, or oh, it might be nice to be retired one day. Like in your 20s, you mostly don't think about it at all. Like most people are just enjoying their 20s and not thinking about it whatsoever. But then you get your professional degree, you have a lot of student loans, you're trying to do all these different things, you're trying to buy a house, you're trying to start a family. And then maybe once the kids are in preschool, about to start elementary school, you start thinking, huh, I guess I have like 15 years with them or 10 years with them left. And then at some point, I got to think about retirement. Maybe I should start thinking about that. Usually people are like, oh, I'd love to retire like late 50s, early 60s. And, you know, I ask them, well, how did you pick that number? And they're like, yeah, I just kind of made it up, right? And so I think a lot of people sort of feel like they need to do something because it's sort of expected, or that's what everybody else does, or I like my job, why would I want to retire earlier, right? When I was in my 20s, I used to think that the goal was early retirement. And I actually have a very terrible book on Amazon from when I 10 years ago that I wrote when I quote unquote retired at the age of 25. And I really thought I was retired. I worked in corporate America for only 3 years. I worked in college, you know, as a teaching assistant for 3 years before that. So I had saved up a decent amount. I was sort of into like the radical early retirement movement. And I was really kind of into the idea of like not having to go live this sad corporate existence where I didn't get to be myself, basically. What I found out is that wasn't the end goal. That wasn't the purpose. That didn't necessarily give me the meaning that I was hoping for. And then I started helping people with student loans after I met my now wife. And that was really exciting. And it was fun to have that purpose. And so I think that what folks want is freedom. And I think people want freedom over their time, and that people think they want to feel like they don't have to do something. You know, it's not very fun as a human to feel cooped up, unable to do what you want to do with your time. And thinking about time freedom, you know, if you have a lot of student loan debt, a lot of times the advice will be live on beans and rice, live like a resident, whatever. The problem is that's optimizing for somebody being a multi-millionaire one day. And you might say, that sounds great. Sign me up for that. I want that. But I also think it's really important to not prioritize money so much. Easy for you to say, Travis, you have plenty of it, you know, whatever, you know, but I'm serious in this because what I see is that, you know, they say money doesn't buy happiness. It does up to a level. The studies 10 years ago said 75,000 at least was, or about 75,000 was like the optimal minimum income for happiness or something. So maybe double that now, maybe it's 150,000. But the interesting thing is most of our community are professional degree earners. Maybe an average household income range of around, let's call it 120 to 500,000. Like that's kind of the broad range of people who listen to this podcast in terms of their household income if they're in a partnership or marriage. That income is enough to meet needs. Maybe it's not enough to meet wants. The thing is once your income is enough to go on decent vacations, have health coverage, live in a home that's dry and warm, or cool in the summer. Those are incredible minimum standards that humans find really great joy from, right? And then when you get into this income level that's higher and you start driving a Lexus instead of a Toyota and you start buying a 30-inch telescope mirror instead of a 18-inch telescope mirror, that's not going to hit land with a lot of people, but that's, you know, that's my version of Lexus versus Toyota. Is it fun to drive a Lexus? Definitely. But is it going to make a huge difference in your long-term happiness? No, unless something around that allows you to connect with more humans and feel more joy and feel more togetherness and community. At least that's what I believe. Is the big fancy house fully renovated with the, you know, everything outside, right? Like the jacuzzi, the sauna, the pool, is that going to meaningfully impact your happiness. I mean, it will short term, but long term, it's probably not going to make a huge difference. And so what will make a difference? Well, if you like your job, definitely keep working, keep making the money, keep doing what you're doing. But so I'm not trying to convince you that you need to early retire. I actually think most people should not do that. What I do think, though, that you could do is realize that you probably are already on pace to have too much money in your life. A lot of the advice that I see online optimizes for how rich are you going to be when you're older. And that's fine. Certainly, it's probably better to have too much than not enough. But I would kind of suggest that there's nothing that great about having $20 million at retirement instead of 10. There's probably nothing that great for having 10 versus 5. And what I mean by that is like your choices along the way determine what you end up with when you retire. Like if you think about somebody saving, let's say 15% of their income, who makes a smart Social Security claiming strategy, who doesn't upgrade their house multiple times in terms of moving to ever bigger houses, you know, and just constantly incurring all those transaction costs. If you just look at a typical professional family that buys a reasonable house, you know, maybe upgrades it some with renovations, but stays in it for when their kids are in elementary school to high school, that family can pretty confidently retire in their early 60s if they're really careful about things. Early 60s is pretty good compared to when most Americans retire. A lot of people have higher savings rates than that, right? I would say a lot of our financial planning clients, for example, are socking away tons of money in really smart ways, and they're going to have the ability to retire in their mid-50s or sooner if they want to. And when somebody's on pace for that, then the question has to become, what if you didn't wait until 55 to do some really cool things with how much you work? What if you decided to take some risks with your life and your career sooner than that to really feel like you're truly living? Not to say that if somebody's working tons of hours, they're not truly living, but I think that it's important to stop and think, wait a second, I think a lot of people think about this in their mid-30s, at least I'm thinking a lot about it. I'm thinking a lot about death right now. I don't know why. I think it's because I've been seeing more stuff in the media about it, like people my age dying of cancer and things like that. Listening to When Breath Becomes Air, an audiobook. There was a granddaughter of JFK recently who died of cancer. Personally, both from like a, wow, how does mortality make me confront what I believe, my faith, hope for the future, right? I mean, that's personal thoughts. But from a professional financial planning thoughts, we don't know if we get to retire at 60. Do you know what I mean? And if you're working 50 hours a week, 55 hours a week, hoping that one day it's all going to work out, what if the choice is not between, could I retire a little bit earlier and then have 30 golden years to enjoy? What if I take some pressure off myself and work 4 days a week for the next 5 years while my kids are young, right? What if I say no to some professional opportunities that will slow my professional development, but will also give me more time with family? Maybe that's not what you want to do, and that's totally fine. But I think when I talk to a lot of professionals, there are some folks that are like, I was born to be a pharmacist. I love this. I live and breathe this, right? Some people, I was born to be a physical therapist. I was born to be a physician, a veterinarian, et cetera. But I meet a lot of people, probably the majority, that I ask them what would happen if you won the lottery tomorrow. And they say, well, I'd work a lot less, right? And I say, what does a lot less mean? And they're like, maybe 20 hours a week, something where I'm active, I'm enjoying my work, I'm able to pick and choose what kind of things I like to do, but I'm not having to be in there 5 days a week. And it's like, what if you could do that sooner? Maybe not 20 hours a week, but what if you could do, you know, 0.75? What's stopping most of these things from happening is conversations people have. Because, you know, 0.75, at least in the moment, qualifies for PSLF because it's full-time for most employers' definitions. It's at least 30 hours a week. Most places will give you benefits at 0.75 if you work at a big employer. And when you look at marginal tax rates, you don't actually lose all that much when you reduce your income 1 day a week. So what do I mean by that? Consider that for a married couple, once you're making over, I think it's about 110, 120K, you're in a 22% tax bracket. If you think about income-driven repayment, that's an extra 10. And if you think, if you live in a state with an income tax, that's probably an extra 5. So we're at 22 plus 10, right? 32 plus 5 is 37. And then throw in Social Security tax. If you are below the max Social Security wage amount. I think that's about 170 or so. So now throw in an extra 7.65, I think it is, right? So it's about, just say, let's just round it up to 8, just for easy math. So 37 plus 8. And so you're at 45%. You're losing, I mean, just kind of rounded up to half. And that's a marginal tax rate, which means that you're only getting taxed that high on the last $1,000 that you earn, not the first $1,000 that you earn. Let's say you're making $100,000 salary per year, just to try to make it easy, and you work a 40-hour work week with 5 days a week. For every like one day per year, per week, or very one day you work per week a year, that translates to roughly a $20,000 annual salary. So for example, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, that's 40 hours a week. That translates into this mythical $100,000 salary I'm just sort of making up, right? So if it was possible to go from 100K to 80 by cutting out all Fridays and having three-day weekends every weekend, you're making 80 instead of 100, but you're not really making 80 instead of 100. You're making the difference after taxes. So 100K minus 80K is 20K. That's what the Friday, working every Friday the whole year is worth pre-tax. But then cut it in half because of taxes. So now we're at $10,000 roughly that you're taking home and keeping. Think about that. $10,000, $800 a month. If you drive a 10-year-old car instead of a brand new car, that is approximately $800 a month for most people. That's what we see in our survey data. You know, around $700 to $800 a month is typical car payment. So if you are figuring out ways through sacrificing to not have a car payment, that is the same thing, like that has the same income after taxes as somebody working, so 4 days a week with a 2012 Accord, Honda Accord, is the same in this case as 5 days a week with a brand new SUV. SUV payment would probably be more than that. Probably a brand new Honda Accord. Probably brand new Honda Accord 5 days a week is the same thing as 4 days a week with an old Honda Accord in this particular analysis. I don't think people think about this with their finances enough. I don't think people think creatively enough about their finances. That's why we started SLP Wealth, because I wanted to help people think this way, not just in the context of creative thinking about their student loans, but in everything. I think it's such an opportunity. And when people miss out on this, it's such a missed opportunity, because it's like, again, you might feel like, oh, great, I have more money than I need in retirement. I'll have some for the kids. I'll have some for charity, et cetera. I mean, I don't know. I think that that's like a little bit overdone in terms of how good that is. I mean, I've watched people in my family have too much when they passed and they didn't need to be so worried. You know, and I'm trying to make sure that other people are able to like not be worried. It's interesting because what most people do, most middle class people, right? Let's say non-professionals, just people with like that graduated high school, right? That work in the trades or something like that. The typical American household, I think, I forget the exact median income, but like 60, 70K median household income. That means half people below, half people above. So what does that like true middle class person do? Most of them save a little bit to get a match in their 401k if they have one at all. They might have 60 or 70K in their 401k when they retire. They take Social Security too early because they need the money. And they have Medigap plan, Medicare, and they live a very modest retirement on a fixed income. And then if they live too long and they can't take care of themselves, they have maybe a house that's paid off and they work with a local estate attorney to try to essentially transfer that house to their kids through a trust or something like that, so they don't lose it to Medicaid when they go to the nursing home. And the nursing home picks up most of the Medicaid bill. That's what the typical person does in retirement in America. And so anything above that is significantly better than the average, right? And when we think about you being in your, most of the people listening to this in your 30s or 40s, et cetera, you have so much life ahead of you. A little bit of creativity along the way will add so much value to your life. And so I hope you think creatively. I hope you think, oh, wow, well, if I can retire early or late and it doesn't have too much of an impact on my mortality, then maybe I should try to, first of all, not worry about it so much. Figure out more, am I enjoying life in the moment, right? In the moment, am I enjoying life? Would I do something differently? One really cool conversation I had with one of our financial planners with SLP Wealth recently was This person thought that they could not, they had a client who thought that they just could not afford another child, and they just couldn't do it. It was just impossible. And this person, this client, really wanted another child. He basically used a spreadsheet that we have to show her that actually, if your savings rate is like literally zero for like the next 5 years, as long as you're willing to have the child go to like public school and not feel like you have to do 10 out of 10 in terms of like expensive kids activities, like across the board, right? Like there's some caveats, but like if you have to hire the nanny and then the preschool, the daycare, that will not make a significant difference in this person's retirement age. And we were able to prove that with math. And this person was so excited. I think a lot of folks think, because I have so much in student loans, I don't have a lot of options in life. The only option I have is I got to live like a resident. I've got to eat rice and beans. I've got to have a 50% savings rate. I've got to live like my hair's on fire to pay off this debt. My question is, well, what's the point? Like one time I was hanging out, this is going to be really weird. My wife and I were just like driving around this like historic St. Louis cemetery once. This place is massive, like one of the biggest cemeteries I've ever seen. Like, because St. Louis used to be like number three city in the whole country way back in the day. And so there are so many people buried in this historic cemetery. The founder of Anheuser-Busch has got a mausoleum there. We drove up, we looked at it, and I think to my recollection, it literally said like, I came, I saw, I conquered. And it's this really amazing mausoleum, absolutely beautiful. It looks like a church. It's gorgeous. But it's like, did he really conquer? I mean, isn't that kind of ridiculous? Like, I came, I saw, I conquered. It's going on someone's tomb. And in the grand scheme of things, like when Anheuser-Busch merges a gazillion times in the next 100 years, is anybody going to remember that guy's name? Absolutely not. So like, was all that extra money that he saved up building this giant beer empire worth it? I don't know. Like maybe to him it was. But I wonder if we stop beating ourselves up and we stop trying to be the richest person in the cemetery, if we could live more. That's kind of my big idea for 2026. And could you use your giant brain, which most of you listening to this do have huge brains and really super high intelligence levels, can you use some of that creativity to think more creatively about your own finances and take pressure off yourself to say that, hey, yeah, I have six figures of student loans. Yeah, I'm going to be in debt for 20 years or five more years because I'm waiting on PSLF buyback, or 1 year or maybe five more years because I'm waiting on PSLF buyback. Like, can you take a lot of that anxiety or worry and convert it to, oh, I have such an opportunity right now. PSLF is cumulative, not consecutive. So if I wanted to take 2 years off of work, I could do that and pick it back up and still get PSLF down the line, right? Or could I know that I'm going for forgiveness no matter what? So regardless of whether I'm on the IBR plan or the RAP plan or whatever plan they come up with, I'm okay. Like as long as I can be careful of my big fixed expenses and not do too much lifestyle creep on the things that are multipliers, I'm going to be good. What I mean by multipliers is when you go to a super fancy coffee shop instead of like the cheapest one you could go to, right? Like the, I don't know, whatever, the Dunkin' drive-thru or something. Does that super fancy coffee shop have that exponential effect on your spending? Probably not, right? Unless you're looking at the person in front of you and thinking, man, they have some great clothes. I'm going to buy all those clothes. Like, I don't know, maybe. But like, I think there's no big multiplier effect from going into the, you know, nicer coffee shop, right? You're going to spend an extra $200 a month over what you'd spend it in the cheaper one. Not going to have any impact really meaningfully on your retirement at all. However, when you buy the 5,000 square foot house in the really expensive neighborhood, suddenly everything is multiplied about that with your spending. The maintenance expenses, the property taxes, the insurance, the stuff you have to fill the home with because it's so huge, the pressure you feel to be a part of certain organizations that might be like country clubs, that might have big dues or something like that. There's nothing wrong with that, by the way. I'm simply saying that if you feel like big fixed expenses are getting in the way of stuff you want more, then it is a problem, right? And I think, again, that so many people feel like I've got to work 5 days a week because I have to maintain my 15% savings rate because I have to retire at 62. And like, oh my gosh, I have no flexibility. There's probably a bunch of hacks that you're not using that you could use, right? Like back to Roths, taxless harvesting, donating appreciated stock shares to charity, taking advantage of the various financial planning hacks that are out there. to reduce that retirement age without changing anything from maybe 62 to, let's say, you know, 58 or something like that. And then maybe you say, well, if I could push that age of 58 to like 60, but work less along the way, that sounds pretty cool. I guess one last Travis rant for 2026, when you're thinking about your big financial resolutions, if I had a dime for how many student loan borrowers with professional degrees told me that they want to get passive income, get into alternative investments, get into private investments or real estate to get passive income, I would be a multimillionaire from just those dimes. Why? Why do so many people feel that way? I think that a lot of people, especially if you got kids, are really tired. And it's exhausting trading time for money week in, week out, year in and year out. And you think to yourself, gosh, if only I had a little bit of passive income coming in to replace what I'm making with my active clinical time, I could have some breathing room. I could relax. I could be less stressed. And what happens is a lot of alternative investments, real estate things, you know, courses, online influencers sort of come out of the woodwork to try to fill that hole in your heart and fix the problem with their solution, which is you should get involved in, you know, short-term real estate flipping, or you should get into whatever, you know, structured credit, or you should get into, you know, oil and gas leasing, or, you know, something exotic. In my experience, the vast majority of these alternative investments and private sort of syndications and things like that are extremely lucrative for the people pushing them. Super high fees, very opaque, very illiquid, very difficult to get out of it when you want to. And it's essentially, in my view, a lot of this stuff is preying on folks that desperately want to be able to cut their hours or have more time with family or stress less. I'm not saying that all of those things are bad, just to be clear, but I think that there are sober and calm ways to get involved in real estate in a really productive way. And if that's you, then awesome. But I think that what a lot of people don't realize is instead of going out hunting for alternative investments and passive income and stuff like that, you might have something right in front of your face that you could do that's so much easier. What I mean by that is, like, again, if you're cool with making that trade-off of the 2012 Honda Accord versus the brand new one, maybe that's the ticket to four-day weeks every week and not having to work on Fridays. Maybe the ticket to passive income is just taking your surplus of what you don't need and just putting it in the market in a smart way. There's plenty of passive income you can earn just in stocks without having to find something super, super sexy that everybody seems to want. And, you know, sometimes I think people kind of, you know, just to be admitting that I'm a little bit of a hypocrite here, sometimes people just are interested in some other things because they just want to feel something different from what they do all day, every day, right? Like if you are an expert at your field and you just do something that's somewhat repetitive over and over and over and over again, a lot of smart people are just like, I just want to find something else to try to study and have some sort of way to know if I'm doing good at it, just to feel alive, right? And I think sometimes people get involved in stuff like that for that reason. But it doesn't have to be something that is an intentional side hustle. I mean, it could just be a hobby. Like that's one of the reasons I've gone nuts with like amateur astronomy, because I desperately needed a hobby. I desperately needed something to feel like I'm interested in other things besides just financial planning and student loans. I mean, my wife would joke sometimes that like, I'm so boring. All I talk about is financial stuff, World War II history, and student loans. And now I'm way more interesting. I've added the fourth dimension of amateur astronomy. So she's like super impressed. I'm just joking. But be kind to yourself in 2026. Don't feel like you need to go searching so much for something that's going to be the perfect cure for whatever you're worried about. Maybe the perfect cure is just being creative with your life and being willing to take some personal risk and being willing to get help if you want somebody that's going to help you stay accountable. If you do want a student loan plan, there's a lot changing in 2026. Of course, Student Loan Planner or, you know, student loan company can help with that. studentloanplanner.com/book. And if you're wanting to go deep and think creatively about your life, of course, slpwealth.com is a spot you can go to get that all-encompassing financial advice. And I guess I'm supposed to say SLP Wealth is an SEC registered investment advisor, and past performances don't guarantee a future results. I'm excited for the year ahead. You're going to accomplish so much. You're going to get more peace. You're going to go to the gym more now than you will later. I mean, I know for sure that's going to happen to me. And be kind to yourself. Don't beat yourself up so much. Don't feel like you're less than. Don't feel like you've got to listen to cookie cutter advice. It's going to cause you to be the richest person in the cemetery. look at the math, think about what you want, talk to your significant other if that's applicable to you, and try to figure out something exciting in 2026 that if you accomplish it together, you get closer to a goal together that you set together, that you're going to feel more alive. When you're already doing a great job saving, take advantage of that by living more creatively in the moment instead of when you're 60. So those are some encouraging thoughts for 2026. And of course, I'll have a lot more on student loans once we get a little bit more deep into the regulations coming out. We'll do a lot more student loan specific pods. If you liked this podcast, remember to go to Financially Free Era. That's our other podcast on financial planning. So Financially Free Era, you can just type that in, subscribe, follow that show. I know you'll love that if you like this one. Thanks for listening to the Student Loan Planner podcast. Hope you have a great rest of your week. Are you on the free Student Loan Planner email list? If yes, you can upgrade your experience and discover student loan loopholes so good, they might get repealed if I talk about them publicly. Find out my very best thought leadership that I really just can't be super open about anymore, unfortunately. If you want to get our very best tips, not just the ones that I can share for free, go to studentloanplanner.com/insider to get a special discount for your year membership. That's studentloanplanner.com/insider and get our very best dozens of bonus content and tips that's going to save you money and get you out of student debt faster. And if you're already an SLP insider, please reply back to those emails and let me know how I can make it even more valuable.